I'm Clayton Morgridge, and I have some comments now about what makes life worth living.
Sometimes I don't know where this dirty road is taking me. Sometimes I don't even know the reason why. But I guess I keep a gambling, lots of booze and lots of rambling. Well, it's easier than just waiting around to die.
In the film Crimes and Misdemeanors, a wise European existentialist, Professor Levy, appears on video reflecting on the difficulties of living well in a universe without God. Here is one clip.
But we must always remember that when we are born, we need a great deal of love in order to persuade us to stay in life. Once we get that love, it usually lasts us. But the universe is a pretty cold place. It's we who invested with our feelings. And under certain conditions, we feel that the thing isn't worth it anymore.
What are these conditions in which we feel that life isn't worth it anymore? The conditions in which love dries up. How about a world in which there is no place for us, where we don't matter, where there is nothing we can do that has value? Is this not the world in which so many people now find themselves, the world from which they flee from their lives into a stupor brought on by alcohol and opioids, or escape from life by suicide? As Chloe Wallington writes in a piece called Who Owns Tomorrow, life expectancy in the United States, the richest country in the world, continues to decline. Opioids, alcohol, and guns are easier to get than health care and a steady and meaningful job. With no hope for the future, Americans are dying en masse by drug overdose, liver failure, and suicide. 70,000 more Americans died in 2017 than in 2016. 47,000 of those additional deaths were self-inflicted, 120 souls per day. Over 1.5 million others tried, but did not succeed. Wattlinger was moved to write this piece by the fate of her brother, Rodney. Rodney ran up a large student loan debt going to college, but was unable to finish, which meant he couldn't get a well-paying job. Hounded by collection agents, he worked various jobs for a few months until the creditors caught up with him and started garnishing his wages. Then he would get by for a while selling food at music festivals. His sister writes, "Thousands of people knew and loved him from the jam band circuit. He was an anarchist, but ethically rather than politically. I found these lines in one of his notebooks after he passed away. Every time you loan a tool to a neighbor, share food with the hungry, or give a ride to a stranger, you are embracing the anarchist ideal. Live it." But he couldn't live it always. The crisis of never finishing college became a source of lifelong shame for Rodney as debt collectors hounded him for money he didn't have. The way they hunted him across the country meant that he was never sitting still for more than 6 months his entire adult life. My brother took his life in April of last year. Rodney left no note, just several empty bottles of vodka. Until a few hours before he died, he had been 2 months sober, trying a keto diet and going for 13-mile runs while working full-time. He was struggling to better himself until the last moment, but came up against more powerful forces. It is not a unique story. Shortly after Rodney's death, a student loan company called my mom to ask about payment of the debt. "He's dead," she replied. The agent offered her condolences but explained that death did not alter the terms of their contract. End of quote. Unemployment, underemployment, uncertain employment, meaningless employment, and debt. These are among the soul killers that are abroad in our land today. Chloe Wattlington writes, "Yes, these deaths are deaths of despair, but more precisely, they are capital punishment for those who fall down in a winner-take-all society. Further undermining the conditions in which it is worth staying alive is what Watlington calls the evaporation of public life, the decline in social experiences not organized around pay or profit. Recall Desiree Helliger's piece earlier on The Old Mole today about the city of Portland closing the Columbia Pool and other rec center activities, as well as cutting daycare at multiple sites that serve low-income people. And as we heard from Bill Resnick and his guest, the threat of eviction and homelessness hangs over the heads of millions, and we can see the results of that every day on the streets of Portland and every other city. Watlington concludes her piece, "People are tired of it all, but find that they have no one to turn to. They are too suspicious of each other, too cynical about the motives lurking behind every attempt at fellow feeling and human connection. To get to the future we need, we are going to have to generate new collective lives out of the wreckage of neoliberal atomization." Well, I think Watlington is somewhat too pessimistic here. Political and social forces are rising up that challenge the rule of obscene wealth and corporate power. Many people are making friends with socialism as a concept and as a movement. Organizations like the Democratic Socialists of America, or DSA, the Bernie Sanders campaign, Black Lives Matter, tenants' unions, teachers' unions, and many others are venues where people can generate new collective lives out of the wreckage of neoliberal atomization and reestablish fellow feeling and human connection. And beyond finding meaning in their own lives, they are working to bring about that better world that we know in our hearts is possible, a world organized and directed by the goal of a flourishing life, a desirable life on this fragile planet, rather than the meaningless and unsustainable goal of enriching the already rich. I'm Clayton Morgridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
His band, a song called My Sweet. To me, it evokes the sunnier world in which life on Earth finally finds its groove, and we can see our way beyond the gloomy clouds that now lie before us.